Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. So here is the perception. The polling industry and election forecasters suffered an embarrassing election night that will call into question the usefulness of public opinion surveys and horse race political coverage. Is that true? Well, to look at the question, we welcome Tim Versalotti of the Western New England University poll and professor of political science, who joins us along with Dr. Alan Chartok this morning to talk about what went right, what went wrong on Tuesday. Tim, you were with Alan and I on election night, and oh, that seemed so long ago. Things were going fine. How you doing now?
Oh, fine. There's a lot to talk about in terms of the performance of polls, but this comes with the territory. Anyone in survey research probably had an experience similar to mine on Tuesday. My college roommate called from Texas in the afternoon to say, who's going to win? When the results were coming in, my son texted from Virginia, Dad, my fraternity buddies and I, we want to know, is this what we can expect? At various points, my wife turned to me and said, are you sure this is what is supposed to be happening? And the honest truth, while it's very flattering to be perceived as the possessor of all wisdom, I was following it along with everyone else. And I think, although it's very early and the votes are still being tallied, and in some places a lot of votes, there are some lessons we can draw from Tuesday and some additional lessons, no doubt, we're going to learn in the months ahead.
So what are some of the lessons? What are some of the lessons?
Okay, well, so there were some big misses in individual states in terms of the pre-election polling. And if you look, in one case, it's the same state that really was off the mark in 2016, and that is Wisconsin, although there's still a small amount of vote to be counted in Wisconsin. Generally speaking, the polling had Biden up by 6.7 percentage points on average going into Tuesday. He'll win by less than a percent. And that's the biggest miss, but not the only one. The polls were off by a similar magnitude in Ohio and off by about 4 points in Texas and about 4 points in Florida as well. And the challenge is there could be circumstances in each of these states that are unique, and therefore it's hard to draw broad lessons. So these are more theories than explanations based on data. That is to come, no question. When you're doing a pre-election poll, you're trying to anticipate who's going to show up, and you want your likely voter pool to look somewhat like what you anticipate will occur on election day. And it could be that, again, in this cycle, as in 2016, the surveys didn't capture enough voters without college degrees, men in particular. One innovation or change that the polls made after 2016 was to add mathematical weights by education, because we do tend to get fewer non-college educated respondents than there are in the population. So you can weight that data up, but the question becomes, do you have the right ones in your sample? So do you have the folks you do have in your sample who lack a college degree, are they typical of the population that you're undercounting? Might not be the case. You might have some who lean Democratic. You might be missing some of those non-college educated voters who are more likely to vote Republican. The anticipated voting behavior of senior citizens might have been off in some places, such as Florida. The perception was, or the expectation was, because of the pandemic and because senior citizens are disproportionately affected by COVID-19, both in terms of illness, complications, and death, that particular group, which had been very strong for Donald Trump in 2016, might shift more toward Joe Biden. Some of the early exit polling, and again, the exit poll is updated and adjusted as the votes come in as well, suggests that perhaps Trump won back some of that senior citizen support in places like Florida. So a lot of individual explanations may be out there.
So there are several ways to ask this question, and let me go this route, which is, would you have guessed, or is it logical from your perspective that the four states that we are obsessed with right now are Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada?
Pennsylvania is not a surprise. It was expected because there would be a significant right. amount of voting by mail, and that the Pennsylvania state legislature had mandated that that vote could not be counted until after Election Day, that Pennsylvania conceivably could be the tipping point state. Georgia, to some extent as well, the pre-election polling there showed a very close race, so that isn't a surprise necessarily. And in terms of Arizona, again, the pre-election polling showed Biden on average up 9/10 of a point there, so it's not a surprise that we're focused on that state as well. And I toss in North Carolina, another state that was on the knife's edge in pre-election polling.
I realize this doesn't have to do with polling per se, but many people are pointing to the AP Associated Press call of Arizona so early on election night, which still is in question, and yet through many maps is still being factored in as the vice president, former Vice President Joe Biden, is only six votes behind in the electoral count of winning the presidency. What do you make of that?
It's very interesting. The broadcast networks, CBS, ABC, NBC, and CNN, pay for a traditional exit poll that they call the National Election Pool, where you do a random sample of precincts around the country, and you hire interviewers to intercept voters as they emerge from those precincts on Election Day. There's also a great deal of telephone polling ahead of time to capture people who voted early and people who may have voted by mail. And that is a core part of the projections that the networks make, along with, of course, incoming election returns on Tuesday night. The Associated Press and Fox News use a different technique. They use a set of data called VoteCast, which is a combination of exit poll data, but also a great deal of pre-election interviewing that's conducted online through an online panel maintained by the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago, a very methodologically, rigorously selected online panel. It's very well respected in the industry. So AP and Fox News are working from a different set of data and expectations, and they clearly know something that the rest of us don't. And they are, at least to this point as we're speaking, have stuck with that call.
You know, this is a country of conspiracy theories, and the polling has brought on some interesting conspiracy theories, like somehow the word went out to Trump people to lie to their pollsters. There was a concentrated effort to confuse the polling. Is there any possibility that's true?
We hear that a lot. And I will say this. In my field, and I'm a member of the American Association for Public Opinion Research, there has been a great deal of online discussion about the notion of the shy Trump voter who either does not want to complete a survey or, when contacted, lies throughout. And there isn't a lot of empirical data to support the idea of people taking a survey and being dishonest throughout, because it's very easy to pick out. Voter preference is just one of the questions you'd ask in an interview. You'd also ask about party identification, strength of party identification, political ideology, vote history, views on particular issues. And the average survey respondent would find it very difficult to tell a consistent story throughout such an interview to maintain the lie, so to speak. It's very hard to pull that off. And there are all kinds of ways you can check for the validity and reliability of your data to see if that's happening. We're just not seeing a whole lot of that. Now, in the past 36 hours, there has been more talk, not about shy Trump voters, but defiant Trump voters who simply don't answer surveys. They're not picking up the phone. They're not in the online panels, the methodologically rigorous ones that the industry makes use of, such as YouGov or the National Opinion Research Center panel. They're just not there. And if you don't complete a survey, even a small number of them, it's very hard to weight them up mathematically. So it could be simply that this particular segment of the electorate says, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to answer your questions. And what gives this a little more evidence is in the 2018 midterms, polling was generally quite accurate. And these big misses are something we've seen in 2016 and now 2020. And perhaps it's unique to a particular kind of voter who supports President Trump. This is something that the industry no doubt will keep studying to see if there's evidence to support the idea of a defiant Trump voter as opposed to a shy one.
We only have about 2 minutes left, but I'm curious on just, I think a lot of us think that we know the polls that are put out and some are more reliable than others. And I think most of us understand that. But then we know that there's internal polling and the candidates are doing polling. And I often think, oh, well, they must have an idea of what's going on. I wonder what their numbers say. Can you just talk a little bit about that, of what it is that the candidates often have at their disposal?
Absolutely. There is a huge difference there. With the advent of data science and the use of big data, the merging not just of public opinion surveys, but also merging that with market research data, the campaigns know so much more about their base, about who's up for grabs, who is persuadable, and who they need to turn out, because they're melding survey data and with market research data. So it's not just, is this a Democratic-leaning voter, 18 to 29, but what social media do they use? Mm-hmm. What TV programs do they like? Where do they shop online? And it is with that rich data and the sophisticated algorithms that the campaigns are using, that's how they're deciding their allocations of advertising money, voter outreach money, field organization, and most importantly, candidate travel. There is a reason Joe Biden did not go to Texas, even though the polls showed it was close there. The Biden campaign saw a completely different landscape than what is available to all of us relying on telephone and online surveys. We're seeing a glimpse of what the campaigns are seeing in the electorate.
Well, we are out of time. You've helped us, I think, right, Alan, make sense of this a little
right
bit?
Right indeed. You know, Tim is really one of our favorite people at WAMC, and I've always said I would love to take a course with him.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Tim Versilotti of the Western New England University Poll and Professor of Political Science, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Alan, you're off the hook. You've had a hell of a morning. Wonderful job with the governor. I know you have another interview to do, but
no, that's canceled. We're going to use the governor interview on the Capital Connection.
Excellent. All right. So you're off the hook then.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, be well. Thank you very much for everything.
You too, Jim.
We'll be back with more Roundtable right after this short break.